And good morning, and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy, joined in the studio with Chip Horton.
Hola, amigo.
Certainly thankful that you all have joined us, and looking forward to our study together in just a few moments in Daniel chapter 7 as we continue in our studies this morning. Also, want to go ahead and remind you of a few things that are ongoing or upcoming this week. There's the gospel meeting, two that you have opportunity to be able to catch. And one is in Athens at the Central Church of Christ. Brian Braswell is down there doing a great job speaking about biblical events that changed our world. And had a great opportunity to listen to Brian last night. He spoke about the life of Christ and how that has forever impacted our world. We think about so much just in our time and our dating, but in our morality and so many areas that his life has influenced the world. Also, you have opportunity to get out to Maybank. I'm sorry, that meeting with Brian is continuing through Wednesday. You have opportunity to get out there again. That's the Central Church of Christ in Athens, Texas. But also going on this week through Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Maybank Church of Christ, they are having a gospel meeting with Billy Bland. And he is looking at what is right with the church.
That'll be some Bland teaching.
Yeah. You get out there tonight, right destiny. Tomorrow night, right mission. And even though he's from Mississippi and even though he's a little bland, I think you would enjoy your opportunity to get out there if you indeed get that opportunity. Then want to remind you of the fourth annual TGRN lectureship coming up very quickly next weekend. Yeah.
So
that's coming up very quickly. Mm. Not this coming weekend, but a week from Saturday, November 4th and 5th. We're going to start Saturday at 10 a.m., have lessons, and then lunch together will be provided here at the Mount Vernon building, and have opportunity to update you about things that are going on with the network, and wrap up even on Sunday. And so I hope that you take time to join us. We'd love to have you here in person with us, but if not, tune in with the Gospel Radio Network, and those lessons will be streamed live. Also getting ready that following weekend, November 12th through the 14th, the congregation down at Schertz, Texas, is hosting their annual Schertz Lectures. And so many opportunities before us for gospel meetings and other events. Want to remind you of that. And if you're in the Mount Vernon area, maybe even you can swing by here. Mount Vernon will be doing their annual blood drive November 11th. And so those are a few of the things that that we have going on. Chip, I might let you take a second here. We had a great opportunity this weekend. You got to spend some time with Rafael Barrantes and maybe say a word or two about some of the work that he's doing.
Yeah, this is my classmate from 2000 and 2001, a faithful gospel preacher that became a United States citizen for the purpose of raising his Christian family. Now that they're grown and they're experiencing the empty nest syndrome, he's going to complete his mission of being prepared to go back and open a school of preaching in Costa Rica. So through the years, there's been one here and there. He even directed one for a little while, but funds would dry up. And anyway, so now he's raising support and going back, and it's going to open there in San Jose, Costa Rica, at the Coronado Church of Christ. They have taken out three loans to build a facility to house this project. And so the brethren there are incredible what they're doing. And so he's opening in January, and it's going to be just like Memphis, really. I mean, he's going to have the same number of clock hours, much of the same curriculum. But anyway, he's going to be the director, and he was here this weekend, and he talked at the men's breakfast, and he talked again Sunday night, and received a lot of good feedback. I've gotten several phone calls since he was here Sunday night, And I'm really encouraged by what the brethren have said about him. They're looking to maybe have a couple of trips over there this next year, trying to plan for that. And so that's just an encouragement. If you want to know more about him, you can look at his website. He's got pretty well monthly updates, and that's BarrantesMinistry.com. You spell his name BarrarAntes. So it's BarrantesMinistry, one word, .com. And you can see everything that's going on. He's pretty good about posting, you know, those updates. So if you're curious, he'd be glad to hear from you, and he'd be glad to have you donate if you'd like to donate to that work as well.
Very good. And enjoyed having him in here with us this weekend at Mount Vernon, and know that he would be encouraged by your prayers, but also your financial support as well, is always helpful. Well, those are some of the things that we have in this area and abroad. I know much more is going on, but want to shift our focus now back to our Old Testament Bible studies, and we've been going through the book of Daniel. And look forward now to be able to turn our attention back there as we come to chapter 7. I was thinking it's kind of ironic, if you will, or fitting, I don't know, that we get chapter 2 and chapter 7 really kind of parallels one to each other. Daniel 2, we got to talk last week about that great image and that dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. Well, now it's Daniel that's going to be dreaming dreams and looking for the interpretation thereof. And the answer seems to be very much the same as far as the beast and the images that he's going to see now and how they tie together and provide some characteristics of nations that are to come. And so Daniel's being able to see things that are going to happen, things that are going to occur in the future. And Daniel's one of those prophets that I think he recognizes that his work was before its time, and even seems to long, I wish I could know more. I wish I could even see some of these things come to pass, but is stuck in a time in which he does a great work there among the rulers, but also among in just teaching us, prophesying about things that are to come. And so let's look at our time frame, first off, there in chapter 7 and verse 1.
In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters.
When we look at this, we'll look at this book, of course, one of the things we need to realize is Daniel is not a chronological book. The chapters don't flow year by year. In fact, there are times that we know, in looking at these dating elements that Daniel gives unto us, that there are things that occur earlier than they are necessarily recorded or placed within this book. If we were to go back into chapter 5, we read the end of the Babylonian Empire and the end of Belshazzar's life. That's in chapter 5. But now we are coming here into chapter 7, and we're reading events that are occurring in the first year of Belshazzar's reign. And so chapter 7 has to be placed before chapter 5 if you're looking chronologically. And so we're not dealing with a chronological book, but he does provide us kind of these time markers to see when these things are happening. We're also told here of the idea that Daniel is dreaming dreams and having visions of his head upon his bed, and he's writing these things. The language of this book now, especially as we get into chapter 7 and onward, is going to shift. We begin to deal very much with apocalyptic type of language. There are a lot of things as we read through here in the book of Daniel, our minds probably are shifting a little bit to the book of Revelation as well. Mm-hmm. There's very similar themes, very similar signs, visions of great things are employed here to convey the message that Daniel is revealing unto us. And so that just gives us a little background as to what we can expect within this chapter. And we look then, as we kind of get that time element, let's look at the introduction of this vision, and that's going to be in verse 2 and 3.
Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another.
All right. He doesn't waste any time in getting right into his material here, the idea of what's happening before us. And already we begin to understand this is a tumultuous time. He's describing here for us this dream that he has had, verse 2, his dream that is being revealed unto him by God. He speaks of this vision there in verse 2. But he's also going to speak here of these four winds of heaven, pictured there figuratively for us, but these four winds of heaven, and they're striving on the great sea. And so this idea that there is a period of time here of agitation, of unrest that's going to be happening in the world, and out of this tumult, if you will, out of this turmoil, are going to arise four great beasts, oftentimes describing for us rulers or powers that are going to come, and they're going to go. Some have just, you know, trying to pick and choose exactly what you describe here, but many relate this sea as humanity or the world, the events that are going to happen, the events that are going to occur, and the totality here. The four winds, northeast, southwest, striving it here upon the face of the earth. This is a dream that largely is going to affect all of humanity. It's going to affect the lives of everyone here. And as we see these kingdoms that are going to be spoken of as we go through here.
You know, the way you put that, you know, people say, well, how do you know? How do you know? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you can mirror that against passages like you alluded to earlier in Revelation 17 and verse number 15, because there the John the Revelator writes, the waters which thou sawest are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And so the reason that we're able to say what we say, certainly we hadn't got to the rest of it yet, but it becomes a little bit easier to understand when you put passages together like that.
Right.
We're not to be dogmatic about that, but I mean, it's easier to say, oh, well, that very well could. Yeah, I see that. I see mm-hmm. that. So,
mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these things, there are difficult. One of the benefits we have, and I think that's the, if you will, the curiosity of Daniel. You know, mm-hmm. We have the benefit to look back and see the historical unfolding of these events, and we can, okay, I see how you can overlay history. Mm-hmm. Imagine Daniel as he's dreaming this dream. As what is happening? Mm-hmm. What's going to occur? Wanting, as I said, even to know more. Well, let's consider this first beast, verse 4.
Verse 4 says, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it.
All right. Maybe our minds are thinking of events that have already occurred here in the book of Daniel. My mind's going back to Daniel chapter 4 and the time of Nebuchadnezzar there, when he was humbled, and there it talks about the idea of his heart being changed even unto a beast of the field, but then giving his kingdom back. But you've been looking at here is a beast that is like a lion, but it has eagle's wings that are later going to be plucked off. And I think about the lion there. He is the king of the beasts. The eagle is the king of the air. Both suggest to us regality, is that a word? A royalness, kingliness. And I would suggest to you, we're paralleling this with the image of Daniel chapter 2. And so this is that head of gold. Mm. This is that which is exalted. And again, the lion, the eagle, is going to represent that for us. And but he's going to be humbled. You take that great beast, and yet he's humbled and made to stand upon his feet as a man. That's what would happen to Nebuchadnezzar in his life. It's also what happens to the Babylonian Empire. they are humbled. They are brought low, and largely because of their pride. We're going to see their downfall again. As I said in Daniel chapter 5, they basically lost their kingdom in a night because they were prideful. Who's going to touch us? Who's going to touch our great kingdom? And in a night, it's going to fall and to be destroyed. And so we have that first beast.
I was just kind of looking at some of these, side column notes over here, and that's the same thing as you mentioned, that Jeremiah would prophesy against the people. Jeremiah 50 and verse 32, the most proud shall stumble and fall, and none mm-hmm. shall raise him up. Pride, goes before destruction. Pride is a serious problem. We saw that in Nebuchadnezzar. We saw it in Israel. And it will always be a problem mm-hmm. as long as we lift ourselves above that which we should.
Mm-hmm. Very true. As we march on then, verse 5, we'll see the second beast.
Behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh.
All right, again, as we see this second beast, we're reminded going back into verse 3 that there are these four beasts that are coming up, each diverse, each are different, one from another. And again, I would suggest to you we can lay over history here and see the successive kingdoms that were seen in Daniel chapter 2 and see them here as well. Here we have a beast that was likened to a leopard, but it had four wings of a bird on its back. When you stop and think about that, a leopard is one of the fastest animals anyway. Mm-hmm. And you put the wings of a bird on it that can fly fast, you have a rapidly moving creature mm-hmm. here. And that is well going to describe what am I doing? I have lost what I was looking at there. If you were thinking I was misplaced, I was talking about that third beast, the leopard. We're going to get to that. You just read about there in verse 5 is this second beast that's likened to a bear. I'm getting ahead of myself and my notes aren't lining up. This second beast, it was likened to a bear that's known for its ferociousness. The bear is certainly not something you want to stumble across as you walk through the forest. But at the same time, a bear is awkward. It's not that mobile. It sometimes lacks grace. It's physically strong, but it is known for its awkwardness there. And this is going to represent that Medo-Persian Empire. They've come together, joined forces, and yet we're speaking of this beast that's raised up on one side. Maybe looking here at the Medes that are first going to be prominent, but later it's going to be the Persians that are going to be more elevated over the Medes. By the time we come into the book of Esther, really, we're talking about the Persian Empire. The Medo part of that empire kind of shifts into obscurity. It's going to have three ribs in his mouth, could be described as simply this idea that it was devouring much flesh, or it could be that these great empires that it had consumed. Mm-hmm. You've got Egypt, Lydia, Babylon, that it's going to be consuming the powers, if you will, of those empires as it conquers over them. And so again, a strong kingdom, but nevertheless one that lacked some grace. Would be that second beast.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch this stuff unfold. And again, we have a fairly easy time exegeting this stuff. I mean, because of what we have encompassed in that great book. But I sit there and I think, well, I wonder what he was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Scary indeed. I have dreams and I can't remember when I wake up, and he's not only seeing it, but recording it.
And I think what hit me as I was looking back over this is, remember Daniel 2. He is looking here at these things that are coming to pass. And he's got to remember the people of God are living through this. It's not just this is happening on the face of the earth. This is what we as his people are going to have to wade through. This is what we're going to have to endure. And it's going to affect our lives as well. And so that would be part of the trouble that he's seeing.
Hmm.
Well, I've already spoiled it, but let's see what that third beast is, verse 6.
After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it.
All right, this will make more sense now as we talk about that third beast. Again, we've already mentioned here the swiftness of the leopard, the swiftness of the bird, and you seem to be combining these two things together here in this image, and would seemingly well fit the Grecian Empire. And Alexander the Great is going to take reign here of a kingdom, and it is going to swiftly spread over the face of the earth. Probably no kingdom is known and spoken of for being so rapid in its spread than the Grecian Empire. And so it's going to come swiftly into power, but also it's going to be spoken of here as having four heads. Possibly here we're looking at the idea that, yes, this empire spread swiftly, but it also is going to quickly divide. Upon the death of Alexander the Great, who died at a young age while still trying to conquer, he had no clear successor. And so his kingdom is largely divided into four greater empires. Now, Dan Cates would be able to tell us so much more about some of this intertestament period of history. Did a great job teaching us at Memphis, but you look here, Alexander's the kingdom's first fragmented, but largely was brought together under four powers, and so that's what's going to happen here with this beast in the division of that empire.
Nothing further to add to that. You've done a great job.
Let's go on then, look at that fourth final beast, verse 7 through 8.
After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things.
Okay, now again, the troubling nature of these beasts as you consider them, and this one certainly the most terrible, powerful, and exceedingly strong of the beast, I think would certainly cause an uneasiness and fear. As Daniel is seeing these things, what would this come to be? And again, I would suggest to you as we overlay history that this represents the Roman Empire that's going to come, and it's going to conquer over the other empires before it. And it's going to be spoken of as having these 10 horns. Again, horns are often representing powers, authorities. Many have linked these horns then to the rulers of the Roman Empire. And looking at the rule that they would have, and there will be some disagreement exactly maybe which 10 horns and the 10 rulers that you would be looking at. Some have suggested that you're going from about Pompey up to Nero. Again, maybe that shifts a little bit. But you're looking at these 10 great rulers that are going to come over the Roman Empire. It speaks here of three horns that were broken, and three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. There were emperors that were put down, Galba, Otho, Vitellius, all quickly appointed, then quickly removed. Then also we have a little horn. This is going to be probably Vespasian. He was a commoner that became a Roman general, then became an emperor. And Vespasian would come here, and he would be one of those that, you know, it speaks of that little horn, less of authority, the eyes of a man, the one here that was more like a man. He came out of humble beginnings And yet he's coming forth and he's speaking great things. He's going to assert his power. He's going to assert his authority. And so, again, this is, I would suggest to you, it's a human power that is speaking of this Roman emperor that's going to come and do great things, and he's going to set himself up, exalting himself and even opposing God's people. And so, again, these four great empires that were successively going to come and rule upon the face of the earth. And so suggestions there before us as to what these things mean and characteristics that fit those kingdoms.
Yeah, the horn idea certainly goes back into the Revelation too. And so whenever we see these things coming to pass, we know, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, the idea of being able to overlay Revelation, same thing here with the horns and the little horn and these powers that are being plucked up then, you know, even by the roots, never to come back again. You know, it's neat to watch on this end of it.
Yes.
Again, I couldn't imagine Daniel's standpoint.
Right. But as much fear as has been struck to the heart there, there's still an overruling power. And let's see the Ancient of Days there in verse 9 through 12.
I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld until the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time.
What I think here is of these beasts that have come forth, so they've exerted their power. Daniel is certainly concerned over these things. He's saying to us in verse 9, I was beholding I beheld all of these things, but guess what? Their thrones were cast down. But there was one who came, the Ancient of Days, this representation here of God. He came and he sat down. I think here of the difference. These beasts rose and fell, but here's the Ancient of Days, who's sitting firmly and securely upon his throne, and he's reigning there in white. We think of righteousness, purity, victory, with hair as pure as wool, wisdom, understanding. That throne is going to be described as fiery flames with wheels of fire issuing forth fire. And here fire is common in depicting the presence of God and judgment, possibly here protection against all unrighteousness. And so here's God who's going to come, and he is going to assert his authority in judgment over these kingdoms that have come and gone. And with him are going to be a multitude of those that serve him. It's a scene of judgment. The thrones are cast down, as we have mentioned. Their books are opened, possibly of their actions. This is what you have done. This is the evil that you've committed. They were used for a time, but they had to answer for their own actions. In this scene before us, the fourth beast is going to be destroyed. The three others are destroyed as well, and yet their influence lingers for a time. I think, again, the idea that judgment has come upon these people, but their influence, the impact that they had, would certainly go on for years. And we talked about that in Daniel 2, how each of these empires successively had an impact that was going to benefit the coming of the fullness of time, and how it was a perfect time for God to send his Son and to establish the kingdom upon the face of the earth. And so that influence and that good that they had done was going to last, that impact upon the world. But nevertheless, those kingdoms were going to be cast down, and this is going to be a comfort. This is what our people have had to live through, these four great beasts. But God is still in control. God is still upon his throne, and he's going to judge those who have done wickedly. And so I think they're a message of comfort in the midst of all of that turmoil.
Mm-hmm. You know, what we're seeing here is God's timeline and the things that are about to take place. And as odd as it may sound, not in my column, Reverend, something that popped into my brain was Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time for everything. Time to be born, time to die, time to get, time to lose, keep, take away, all these particular things that come out. And we don't often understand the timeline that God works on. He lives in eternity. He's from eternity unto eternity. And what he's got in his perfect mind of the way that these things are going to happen, even with the coming of his son, they're amazing to behold. And so as we think about this that Daniel's seeing, and you're saying, oh, well, we've got the rest of the picture here because we've seen what happened. We've seen the devastation. We know about the destruction of Jerusalem. We know about all these various things that took place. But we, like Daniel, can look forward to that which has not come for us either, and be understanding that what is being foretold, even of a beautiful place like heaven, is something that we can look forward to. Mm-hmm. The way that he was encouraging these people about the hope that would be before them. And so I, you know, whether that's appropriate to this particular passage or not, I think, you know, the timeline that God's working on just amazes me every moment I look at it.
I certainly think it does, because you look back at these kingdoms, and one of the things I'm constantly being reminded of is these earthly kingdoms will come and go. Mm-hmm. And but God's kingdom was going to remain constant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we can settle ourselves on today. Kingdoms can come and go. That doesn't affect the ability of God's people to remain firm and steadfast and continuing to serve him regardless of what happens around us. Now, there may be easier times and more difficult times, but God is constant and true. And so certainly a great reminder of that there for us. There's something else here that's going to happen. We have that great throne scene before us, but there's another component to it here. Verse 13 and 14, one like the Son of Man.
I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, in his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed.
All right. Again, see the parallels and how this fits into Daniel chapter 2.
Yep.
You have those four kingdoms that are going to come and as it were, go, but it's in the midst of that fourth kingdom, the midst of this fourth great beast, that we're reading about this judgment that's to come, and you're reading about the one like unto the Son of Man. That here he is coming forth to do his work, and he's going to establish this everlasting kingdom, this which shall not be destroyed, this which is not going to pass away, this which is going to have an everlasting dominion, and it's worldwide, that glory and a kingdom and all people, nations, and languages should serve him. This was a kingdom open unto everyone. There's a few points that I think are well-fitting. We've already talked about the idea of this coming in the time of that fourth beast, that Roman Empire, but also a lesson that some people today in the religious world need to be reminded of and learn. Look at the events of what's happening here. It's in this vision, and he sees one like the Son of Man coming. But he's coming unto the Ancient of Days to receive his kingdom and dominion. Many people want him going away from the kingdom of days to receive his kingdom and dominion. And that's simply not what Daniel saw, and it doesn't fit the biblical events. And what I'm speaking of there are the premillennialists that tell us Jesus came to establish his kingdom. He failed in it, so he retreated unto heaven, put the church in as a temporary stop block, and one day he's coming again from the Ancient of Days to receive his kingdom upon the face of the earth. But when we look at the prophecies and the events that occurred of the Bible, we see Jesus who comes from his Father to the earth, lives among us, dies and is crucified according to the will of God. God mm-hmm. knew these things were happening. And then ascends back into heaven to go and receive his kingdom. Mm-hmm. He ascends into heaven, just as we see here in Daniel 7, verse 13 and 14. And it's then, after he has ascended to his Father, that the church is established, the kingdom's given, is among men there in Acts chapter 2. Mm-hmm. And so lesson there that we need not certainly overlook, that would help us to understand the difference between what man has to say and what the Bible has to say. So that now we know he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, not over some physical kingdom of this earth, but the spiritual kingdom, which is the church. And it's that kingdom that's going to be everlasting. It's that kingdom which cannot be destroyed.
Yeah, early on in John chapter 3, I mean, early on, like, you know, even right beyond the Nicodemus moment, you know, Jesus says, the Father loveth the Son and hath given all things into his hand. And then by the end of Matthew 28, before it wraps up and before we see the, you know, the ascension, Acts 1, Jesus says, all power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. And so that's that great realm of power that you spoke of a moment ago. It's not something that is yet to come. Mm-hmm. That's something that's happened. Ephesians 1, all things are under his feet and they were put there by God.
Very good. Very good. And so great and important lessons there that Daniel was getting to foresee, even though he probably most certainly didn't understand all of them and how this would all play in the past. But imagine, I mean, this is really the end in a sense of that vision. But imagine that's just unfolded before you in this dream. What am I looking at? There's going to be a bit of an explanation. Let's look here in verse 15 through verse 22 to see that explanation.
I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even ever and ever. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet, and of the ten horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld. And the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom.
All right. And so there's some explanation that Daniel is going to be able to receive. Of course, understandably troubled. We've been talking about that. But there in verse 15, he says, I was grieved in my spirit and in the midst of my body. He's troubled. Mm. What does this mean? And certainly that desire to want to know more. And so, while I said the dream was over, Daniel is still in the midst of this vision, as it were, but the pieces of it have been revealed to him. Mm. He's seen it. And so he comes near, probably one of these that are mentioned back in verse 10, one of these thousands that are ministering, and the 10,000 times 10,000 that are standing before him, probably come unto to one of these that are standing around the throne and ask, what is it that I'm seeing? What is it, and what does all of this mean? And there again, we have some indication, some key there for us. How can you link these beasts to these kingdoms? Well, verse 17, the four beasts are the four kings that are going to rise out of the earth. These are those great empires that are going to come. And even as we've seen, they're also going to go. But they would rise, they would exert their power over the people, over the saints of God. But they would come and they would fall. But it's God's people, the saints, that are going to receive a kingdom that they will be able to possess forever. I'm still a little troubled. Those are four kings. Those are four beasts. But what about that fourth one? He was exceedingly terrifying. What can you tell me about him? And this description is going to be repeated. He's adding, it's making war with the saints. It's prevailing over them. Again, could be Vespasian that is warring against Jerusalem that ultimately is going to culminate in the order to his son, Titus, go and destroy Jerusalem. That would certainly seem fitting there in the period of historical occurrence. That beast, though, was going to be judged, and the kingdom was going to be given to God's people. And certainly what is in view here is the Roman Empire being possessed by the saints, not by warfare in the human sense, but by their commitment to humanity, humility, righteousness, that this kingdom was going to break in pieces the others. It was going to outlast the others, and that Roman Empire would come and it would fall, but the kingdom of God was going to stand firm, was going to stand secure. And so again, Daniel's reminded, these are things that are going to come to pass, but God is in control still in the midst of all of these things.
You know, it's for us, I mean, that try our best to study God's word here and see exactly what's being taught. You know, I appreciate when Jesus takes time in Luke 8 to say, okay, let me tell you about the parable of the sower. Here's what it means. The seed is the word of God, and these are hearts. These are the way that men understand. Well, here we've got much the same thing. You know, this is a troubling thing. So notice the comfort that surely is given Daniel here. Look, let me tell you, these are four kings. These are four kingdoms, right? One diverse from another. And so we understand how this fits into, even like you said, Daniel 2 and the beast, the things that would come to pass. But you know that today people are still looking, understanding, well, you know, the four beasts, that, let's see, that's got to be, let's see, Japan, Russia, China, and now the fourth, worse than any, that's got to be Kim Jong-un. That's got to, well, it changes every year with another person that, you know, so next year, what's it going to be? Well, it may not be North Korea. Maybe they're going to, you know. So isn't that terrible, the way that people just refuse what they see right here on the written page and try to make, because it doesn't fit their, as you mentioned, premillennial judgment.
Right. And, you know, I've seen different descriptions of this image of Daniel 2, and to fit what some people try to make it say, basically, you see this distorted image that has this man laid out, and all of a sudden his legs or his toes are just stretched out this inordinate amount of time. Well, what Daniel is depicting here fits well into the history that has already happened, already has occurred, and fits right into the timing of the coming of the church, not into some future kingdom that man has made up in their minds. And so Daniel gets to have that explanation and some further interpretation. Let's look there in verse 23 through 27.
Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and others, another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time, and times, and the dividing of time. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him.
All right, a few things I think are important through here. And one is, you know, someone wants to get kind of argumentative a little and said, well, maybe we've missed the point that, you know, here Daniel is told back in verse 17, these four beasts are four kings. He didn't say these were four kingdoms. He said these were four kings. Well, you link verse 17 over into this section, and you're reminded there when we're kind of using this interchangeably, whether we're talking about kings or kingdoms, because we've already been told even that fourth beast was a king, but now we're being told this is a kingdom that's going to be made up of kings. I think we see that as well in Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar came to stand for the whole of the Babylonian Empire, addressed as the single king, but yet we're talking about his kingdom. And so that may be just a side note there, but I think it's worthwhile mentioning that we need not get caught up on that detail too much, because Daniel seems to use that interchangeably, whether we're talking about a king representative of an empire or a kingdom. And so that's what we're looking at. We're looking at these kingdoms, at these empires, and the individuals that are going to be ruling over them. And so he's going to be reminded that this fourth beast was that fourth kingdom that was diverse in its power and especially in being destructive. There's going to be a conflict, we're being told here. There's going to be this struggle between good and evil, between God and wickedness. But ultimately, the same message we get in the book of Revelation, who's going to win? God is. That beast may struggle, it may fight, but the judgment is set. We already know who's going to be victorious, and it's going to be God. And so those beasts appear powerful, each replacing one another, but none are as powerful as God. They war against his people and speak great things, but God is still capable of removing them. And even though that little horn there seeks or thinks that he can wear out the saints and conquer over them, ultimately he's going to fail. Even though he thinks that he can change time and laws there in verse 25 and speak great things against the Most High, nevertheless, he is ultimately going to fail. He will find God is in control and always will be. And even though God's people would be under his hand for this time and times and a half, three and a half times, probably here speaking just of a period of persecution, nevertheless, his people were going to be delivered. Those kingdoms would be judged, and God and his people would be avenged. And so there's a certainty that I read about as we read through those things, that yes, there's some up and down, and there's this warring that's going to come along, and that's going to have to be endured. But the judgment is set. God is going to be victorious. And while these things may trouble Daniel, they may trouble even the people of God as they have to live through them, nevertheless, they can have confidence in God. And so there's, again, comfort that's being spoken there of, yes, I know these tumultuous times are coming, but take comfort. God still is, and he still is in control.
Yeah, ending in verse number 27 there, it kind of parallels what you said about, you know, the revelation. God wins. End of story. And so then when he gets into the next verse, well, here's the end. Here's the here's the conclusion, you know. And so, you know, again, it's comforting to know how it's going to turn out. You know, sometimes when we talk about a movie or something, we say, spoiler alert, I'm fixing to tell you how it ends. Well, Daniel's given the answer, you know, so he should be comforted.
That's the verse I wanted to highlight. I finally found it there, verse 26. But the judgment shall sit. That speaks all we need to know of concerning the assurity and the certainty of God.
It's like the vision. It's sure, and the interpretation is unchangeable.
Right. And so we wrap up verse 28. Daniel's still troubled.
I put this in American Standard so I wouldn't have to say that word, but here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts much troubled me, and my countenance was changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart.
All right. That's a nice word there that you try to skip. My cogitations.
Yeah, I didn't have to say that.
Troubled me. The idea there, I think, of Daniel's mind swirling. There's a lot I still don't understand. This is the end of the matter. This is the explanation. This is what's going to happen. This is the surety of it. But the thoughts of my head still greatly troubled me. My countenance changed. The whole look of my face changed because you've known someone that's troubled in mind, that's thinking on things, and you can tell just by looking at them, there's something that's troubling them. Mm. Daniel says, I kept the matter in my heart. I kept looking into these things. I kept considering them and thinking about those things that would happen. And again, he wouldn't get to see these things come to pass. He would witness there the change from the Babylonian Empire into the Medo-Persian Empire. Mm-hmm. He would see the beginning of these things, but certainly would not see the end of these things. But he certainly does us a great service in speaking of these things that were to come. And so that as we look back at history, we can look back and see that's what God was saying years before these things came to pass, years before they happened. And I want to end anyway by going back to 1 Peter, 1 Peter chapter 1, and Peter there talking about our salvation that we enjoy, and he's going to remind us this is that salvation that was spoken of by the prophets that went before. Verse 10, 1 Peter 1 and verse 10, of which salvation the prophets have inquired and searched diligently, who prophesied of the grace that should come unto you, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ which was in them did signify when it testified beforehand the sufferings of Christ and the glory that should follow, unto whom it was revealed that not unto themselves, but unto us they did minister the things which are now reported unto you by them that have preached the gospel unto you with the Holy Ghost sent down from heaven, which things the angels desire to look into. And it's that reminder to me, that humbling reminder, that Daniel, Isaiah, David, so many other prophets spoke of things that were to come and could only imagine, could only dream of what God had in store. Well, that's where we see Daniel. He's looking into the stream of time that these things are going to happen upon the face of the earth, but ultimately the coming of that great kingdom, that is the church. Mm-hmm. And he could only imagine these great things that were to come, but you and I get to live in them. And so what a treasure we have.
I was reminded, as this particular event closes, I thought about the things that Mary and Joseph would receive, miraculously. Joseph thought to put Mary away because the condition that she found herself in. And he was given insight. Mary was given insight. And when you look over in Luke chapter 2, about verse 19, it says that Mary kept all these sayings, pondering them in her heart. And I think what we could insert, and certainly I don't have any problem doing that, I bet her head was spinning. Mm-hmm. I bet she had some cogitations, at that particular moment in time. I'm going to give birth to God's son? How am I in the scheme of this, And nevertheless, I just thought about that moment because those words kept the matter in my heart. I thought about Mary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
A lot of things in the Bible make my head spin. The wonderful grace of God.
And so what a great chapter before us as we think about Daniel and his work. And, I'm reminded even that Daniel was so effective because he was one who humbled himself under the mighty hand of God. Mm-hmm. And whatever situation, wherever he found himself, he was willing to be used by God. And he humbled himself. He lived that faithful life. So he was ready in the service of God. And what a challenge to us, even as we're comforted by his great message. And nevertheless, a challenge to be more like Daniel, a faithful servant of God in all things. And so with that, we will close for the day. I will warn you, we're going to step on the gas pedal tomorrow. we've looked at Daniel kind of chapter by chapter, and it's not that these prophecies are unimportant. But we're going to try to cover chapter 8 through chapter 12 tomorrow. Lord willing, JJ and Chris will be in the studio with us and looking at trying to just summarize and look ahead at some of the prophecies that Daniel's going to foresee. And a lot of those have their fulfillment in that intertestament period of history that's leading about to the coming of the church. And so, indeed, a good period of study. So if you want to be looking ahead, look at Daniel 8 through 12 for tomorrow, Lord willing. And hope you can keep listening right here on the Gospel Radio Network. And as always, we hope that you have a great day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.